and welcome to episode 5 of Engaging Internal Comms, the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with new ideas and innovations in our profession. Hello, this is Craig Smith from The Big Picture People. I hope you're enjoying Engaging Internal Comms and you've had a chance to listen to the first 4 episodes. If you've not heard them already, you can jump across to our website, which is engagingic.com, where we've got them all on there. And they're also on iTunes and other podcast platforms as well. What we've got coming up next week is an interview with Jamie Thompson from MTA Learning. And Jamie's going to be telling us all about the importance of experiential and social learning, both in a training context, but also in a communications and employee engagement context, which I think you'll find really interesting. If you've not already done so, we have a Facebook group now, which is, I'll put the link to the show notes to that. And we also have a Facebook page, which you can like, which is at facebook.com/engagingic. We also have a mailing list, which is available on our website. I'll mention this again at the end of the show, but that is at engagingic.com. And if you join our mailing list, we will let you know about episodes that are coming out, and we'll also let you into some other information about the show that is going to be kind of exclusive to the people on our mailing list. And as I said, we have a Facebook group, and the group, I'll put the link in the show notes for that, and that is going to be about building a community of people who listen to the show and work in the profession. And again, it's a private group, so only people who are in the group will be able to see our conversation. So we'll be able to share some interesting information, hopefully, and support each other within the community. Anyway, on to today's interview. In this 5th episode of Engaging Internal Comms, we're going to be looking at how you can use traditional communication channels to engage your employees. Our interviewee works in an organization with a demographic that isn't really suited 100% anyway to using modern digital methods of communication. And this raises an important question, I think, for internal communicators and employee engagers, which is how do we cater for different diversity within the organization, and diversity from a perspective of how people like to take in information and how they like to be communicated to. So our interviewee is very experienced, got some really interesting stories to tell of her own career, but also how she's working in an organization where that could be a particular challenge. So I think you'll find this a really interesting interview, and it'll hopefully challenge our perspectives that sometimes we see that the only future of communications and engagement is down a digital path. Our interviewee today will maybe challenge that and maybe just get us to value some of the more traditional channels that we have and to get the best out of them. So I hope you enjoy the interview. So today's interview is with Amy Holmes, and Amy is going to be talking to us about using traditional channels, not only digital, and using them really, really well. So Amy is an experienced internal communicator. She's worked at organizations like Hermes, and she's currently with Marshalls, and she's also worked at Asda and O2 in the past. Hello, Amy. How are you?
Hello. Very good. Thank you.
Fantastic. And you're based in Leeds, I believe.
I am based in Leeds, yes.
Yeah, and we've just talked a little bit about the weather, and I think it's equally blustery in Leeds as it is where I am at the moment. So watching things blowing around outside the window. So Marshalls, a company that people may not have heard of, or if they have heard of Marshalls, they may be thinking of a different Marshalls. Tell us a little bit about Marshalls, because it's a big organization, I believe.
We are a big organization, and there are unfortunately a few different Marshalls across the world, a very famous one in America, and then a couple in the UK. But the Marshalls that I work for is a manufacturer of products for the landscape or outdoor environment. And I mean, we are quite big in terms of just exactly how far our products reach. One of my favorite things about Marshalls is that our claim to fame is that we have paved every street on the Monopoly board. And actually, we had a special Monopoly board game created when we reached that important milestone. So it's basically, any street potentially that you've walked on in a city centre, especially in London, is probably paved by Marshalls. And we create bespoke products, standard products such as paving stones, stone products as well, concrete. So there's a number of different things that we do, and it's across the whole of the UK in quite a lot of different factories. So it's a very different business to where I've worked before in retail, and and Hermes was retail as well, but very, very interesting.
Yeah, fantastic. So we probably all touched your product at some point without actually realizing it, and with the soles of our feet.
Exactly.
excellent. So that's brilliant. And what's your role actually within the business, Amy?
So I look after internal communications and engagement at Marshalls. I am the first, if you like, in the current capacity, looking after internal communications. The HR team at Marshalls is quite new, just over a year ago, since the team as it currently is started to be brought on board. And so my role at Marshalls was to build the internal communications function from the ground up, and really start putting in channels and ways of working when it came to communicating to our people.
Brilliant. All right. So you really are trailblazing then in your organization, and setting up all of these new systems and processes and ways of communicating.
Yes. Trying to. Yeah. Yes.
Fantastic. So we met at the IOIC conference in late 2018, and you were talking about an area that I thought was really interesting, and this area of neurodiversity in communication. So but I think it'd be really interesting just to find out a little bit, what is neurodiversity, and how does that differ from kind of traditional diversity definitions that organizations may be familiar with?
I think neurodiversity is probably the fancy word for it. It really is just thinking about the different learning capabilities and sort of mental capabilities of the people who might work in an organisation, because we're not all the same. We all have different levels of education and understanding. And so it really is just thinking about the diversity in that way, rather than just the traditional sense of diversity, such as disability, ethnic background, gender. So it's thinking about people as more than just their physical appearance.
Yeah. Yeah, friend of mine calls them surface characteristics of diversity, and it's, I guess what you're talking about is those sort of subsurface characteristics, things you can't always see, but equally important. Absolutely. So, I mean, how is a knowledge or awareness of neurodiversity, how does that impact or influence the way that we communicate more effectively with people from your perspective? What's the sort of the practical implication of that?
So I think neurodiversity helps you to really think about the different needs of your audience, and to adapt the tone and style so that you reach more people with your content. Mm-hmm. I think organisations tend to produce a communications tone and style guide, not necessarily based on anything other than it fits with their brand and it's how they like to communicate. Whereas neurodiversity encourages you to think about how will the person receiving that message interpret it at their level of understanding. And just thinking about there's so many varying levels of understanding in any organisation. We don't all have the same level of intelligence, and therefore we're not all going to receive and interpret a message in the same way. So for me, it helps me look at what I'm communicating and adapt that to a style that is suitable for the majority rather than the minority.
Okay, so that's really interesting. So basically what you would be saying there is that, I mean, is it the case that you would look at, you've just said there, you would look at adapting the communication to a range of different needs. Does that mean you're going to be using different channels in order to communicate with different parts of your workforce in that respect?
Yes, absolutely. I think from a channel's point of view, the message and how you've written that is absolutely key, but then also the way in which you broadcast that. You cannot solely rely on your message being absorbed through one channel. And I think there's always space for a full range of channels. And I guess that's why we, you know, we have channels available to us, and we spend a lot of time in developing and producing different types of channels for different audiences. And what I would always do if I'm, you know, working on a communications campaign or sharing a piece of communication, I would look to push that through a number of different channels, not just one, and then think, that's my job done. I'd have a look across the board and think, right, okay, who do I need to share this message with, and what is their preferred method of receiving communications? So that's how I would always approach, from you know, a broadcast point of view. One channel does not fit everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's fantastic. Now, I remember when I saw you speak for the first time, the first time I heard you speak, you were talking about technology, and this is going back to 2018, and you were saying technology should enhance, not replace what we do, and it needs to be blended with different forms of communication, which I guess it'd be really interesting to know your take on, because we're recording this at sort of spring 2020, when everybody is forecasting that the world is now going to go completely paperless and be digital, and everything will be online now. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? And how does that reconcile with what we've just been talking about there, about this idea that that might not be a platform or a way that some people can effectively learn or get information from? How do you see things panning out in that respect?
I think for me, I mean, this is certainly a bugbear for me, and I've worked in, you know, a number of different communications teams now, and there always seems to be a drive to go digital and go paperless, you know, which is fantastic if that's the capability of the organisation. Mm-hmm. However, I think if we're looking at neurodiversity and then also the generational diversity that is now in an organisation, we cannot ever put all of our eggs into that digital basket, because not everybody is using digital communications tools. And I know that you think at this day and age we should be, everybody uses Facebook and Instagram. That's not true. You know, there's still a generation that doesn't have smartphones or smart devices, or would only ever use a computer to access the internet, for example. And so I think having a range of channels is always going to be very important, unless we get to some sort of futuristic world where everything is digital and everybody has access to really decent smart technology, then, you know, fair enough, that might change. But at the moment, we're not in that world. And I think you only have to look at the way that organizations market, for example. There's still a place for paper marketing. There's still a place for radio marketing. There's a place for digital marketing. So I don't ever think in communications you should exclude the traditional channels that we've all come to know and love, such as using print and posters and leaflets and letters. Simple letters to home have proven to be the most effective channels for me at Marshalls so far. And that is because we have a population of people who are more in that older generation. And I think something that I've read recently, which was quite interesting and just sort of supports this thinking for me even more, is that, and this was something from the UNGC, that they have said that, I think it might have been in 10 years' time, there are going to be more over 60s than there are children. And I think that just cements the fact that, you know, we have different populations, different generations, different understanding levels that need a full suite of different channels.
Yes. Yeah, no, absolutely. And we've covered this on another interview, with which is the sort of the size of the workforce now and the age demographic that's within that workforce is now, you know, very, there's a lot of an aging population, both in society, but also in organizations too. And I guess, I mean, what it reminds me of a little bit is a few years ago when the, you know, the Kindles came out and everybody said that was, nobody would ever buy books, or that was the end of the books. And, you know, and yet book sales, I think at the moment are you know, still as popular, if not more so. And I think there's that sort of tactile nature of books that is, it's not about necessarily education. It's just the fact that people like that sort of tactile nature. So again, it's not necessarily that everything needs to be printed or written or printed in terms of internal communications, but it's just a recognition that probably, you know, we've got thousands of years of experience of doing things in a certain way, and it's not that that the new ways are not good, but there's something to be said for blending it with the old ways as well.
Absolutely.
And with the ways that we're more traditional. So, and I guess that relates to you, we've talked that, I guess that from that more from a kind of an age demographic perspective, but that's something you alluded to earlier and from sort of social backgrounds as well. I mean, you may have younger people who maybe everybody thinks, well, they're millennials, so they'll probably like love, you know, using Yammer and Slack and things like that. But actually from a social background, it may not be something that they're familiar with as well. Do you find that as well is the case? It's not just an age thing, but maybe sort of in a different demographic aspects around this, what forms this neurodiversity?
Yeah, completely. Definitely. I think it comes down to not only the neurodiversity and the age demographics, but definitely the different backgrounds and sort of the access to different tools or different ways of communicating that an individual might be used to or might know about. And so I think that it's very important to also consider your demographics within your organization and to know who your people are. So, you know, who are my audience? Who are working for me? Where do they come from? What do they do? And to get to know them. And you can do that through a number of different methods. I always find that just simple HR data really helps and you understand who's working at the organization. And generally you can get access to your age demographic, location, things like that to understand who might be actually part of your audience.
Excellent. Yeah. So, I mean, without making any stereotypical assumptions, I would imagine an organization like Marshalls, where you've got manufacturing operations, you've got warehouse, that sort of thing, you've probably got that same, that you're quite a profound demographic within your own business. Is that the case?
We do. I would say we do. We're very much, so at Marshalls, we have quite a male population, which is indicative of the industry. You know, it's not unusual at all. It's quite an older population. So while we do have a number of young people who work for us, most of our workforce are over 40. And we also have people who've worked with us for a long, long time. And so they're used to things being done a particular way as well. So when I've looked at how I develop communications at Marshalls, I've taken that into consideration to think about if those people have, you know, got on very well with print communications in the past, then I shouldn't take that away from them.
Mm, yeah. I was going to ask actually, so yeah, I mean, what are some of the specific ways then that you've adapted? Because you were saying at the beginning, you really, well, not necessarily started from scratch, but you're the first person who's had this sort of differentiated comms role. How have you created a comms strategy then that meets some of those requirements? So you've said there about obviously written, more having an availability of written content. What other things have you looked at developing?
So for me, when I first started at Marshalls, the key thing for me was to understand, you know, who worked for Marshalls, and to build a channel plan that represents that gives choice, that represents the differences of the people who work there. And so I had a look at what had happened previously, who works at Marshalls and what is their preferred style, and then what was available to me through linking into what Marshalls was aiming to achieve as a business as well. And obviously a lot of businesses at the moment have that very digital focus. They want to become more digital, and that's no different for Marshalls. They do want to move more into a digital space. However, we do recognize that even in our customer base, as well as our employee base, that there are a number of different needs and wants. And so for me, I looked at having a range of channels that met those existing needs, but also complemented where the business was trying to go. And I always would look at having something that fits into sort of print, face-to-face and digital. And that's kind of what I try to do with any communications campaign that I prepare for and work on, would be to look at, you know, what are we physically giving to people? What are we saying to them face to face? And what are we digitally doing as well?
Okay.
And a lot of the communications campaigns will have an element of each of those different types of channels in them.
And would those proportions vary on the nature of the campaign and who it was targeted at, or would you, do you tend to keep those proportions broadly the same?
It would vary depending on the nature of the campaign.
Okay.
So, for example, I know that our head office employee base, they you know, they're tech savvy, they work on computers for their jobs. So if I need to communicate something to them quickly and efficiently, the way for me to do that would be through the email system or through the intranet, and they would therefore see that in a timely manner. I know that our operations people are largely unconnected, so they don't work on a computer and they don't have access to Marshalls. And the way for me to communicate something to them quickly and efficiently would be to do that in a print form, or would be to do it via their line managers through face-to-face communications. And so I adapt it depending on the need. If we were doing a large communications campaign, and an example would be an engagement survey, we regularly test, you know, the temperature across the organisation when it comes to employee engagement, I would look at a full range of channels so that I would meet everybody's needs to tell them about what was happening and invite them to join in with the survey.
Okay. Okay, so another area. Thank you. Sorry, that's really, really helpful. I mean, another area we're going to look at in terms of this was this idea of neurodiversity as well, which I know is an area that's close to your heart. Is this idea of language and tone and readability, and particularly kind of plain English and getting the tone right for the audience. So just tell me a little bit about that and how that kind of, I know it's something you've frustrated with. I remember reading a post recently you posted on LinkedIn about it. So what is it in particular about that, and how does that kind of link to this overall topic of neurodiversity from your perspective?
I think for me, when it comes to tone, it's I find that, like I've said previously, businesses will adopt a tone and style that complements the branding. You know, that's absolutely fine if that's what they think works for their audience. But I think sometimes we get too caught up in producing a piece of communication that sounds excellent when you read it, and that has, you know, a number of long words in it, like you've got the thesaurus out and had a flick through. And I don't think we should be writing like that. You know, we wouldn't go up to an individual, you know, even at work, never mind in our social lives, and start talking to them in the way that sometimes I see communications being written. And so, you know, while I've referred to plain English and the plain English principles, which you're able to sort of find and have a read on Google, for me, it's all about writing in a way and communicating in a way that it's like I'm talking to friends, and I'm talking directly to the audience. So I would always talk to, as if the person reading it, if the communication is just between them and me, so that they understand what I'm trying to say to them in the easiest way possible and leave no room for confusion. So I would look at, you know, are there simpler words to use? Things like, you know, swap out words like pertinent for things like, you know, saying this is really important. Or just looking at a different and easier way to use words to convey the same message.
No, I can completely relate to that. I mean, we whenever we work with a client for the first time, it's usually that first conversation when you get an idea of the degree of empathy they have for people who kind of don't necessarily know, always know what they're talking about from a technical perspective. And we sometimes get this with, you know, a number of, you'll see it all the time with acronyms and technical terminology that we just assume everybody knows and is ubiquitous, but it's actually, well, I've just used a word there, that is common to everybody. And actually it's not the sort of language they would use, but also it's not, it's exclusive, and it's kind of, it almost, I think some ways, if you're not part of our club because you don't understand our language, yeah. And actually, but that's not what we want to be doing with internal communications. We want everybody to feel as though they're part of this, you know, this whole community. And yeah, so from a practical perspective, in terms of, you know, that's something you would normally do as a matter of course with your own internal communications is to just check that and push back to people who've written some of that or contributed to that. Would you see that as a kind of an educational piece to sort of help them to see that actually maybe we need to just sort of simplify the language or take a few words out that are just unnecessary? Is that what you would normally do, or would you just edit it and kind of just put it out yourself that way? How do you normally deal with that?
No, definitely I do try to educate people to get them to think about the language they've used and, you know, who's receiving their communication. I think for me, one of the things that I always do when I'm working with somebody on a piece of communication is I'll talk about having a read through it and just looking at the stuff that's not adding value. Because I think at times, you know, we tend to add in sentences or additional words that aren't needed. You can just put a full stop and move on. So I always educate people and talk to them about selecting the right words, keeping sentences, you know, concise, say what you need to say. But, you know, there's no reason to waffle. You've got a message to deliver, so deliver the message. So yes, always try to educate people in better ways to communicate. And I think that plays into your brand and tone and style guide as well. And, you know, for us, the brand and tone and style guide that I've produced for Marshall's Internal Communications, it does say that. It says, don't waffle, you know, straight talk, say it how it is. Yeah. And it gives some really practical tips and advice rather than sort of the usual use this color and we say this and we do that. It is just about that practical advice to keep things simple. Don't waffle, say it how it is.
Fantastic. Excellent. Well, I'm sure that that whole idea of around neurodiversity and also the idea that you know, that we should be challenging the assumption that everything needs to go down one platform, whether that's all digital or all face to face or all print, is that it's that breadth of comms that we need to be thinking of. And then it's okay to push back when we may be under pressure to go with whatever's new and novel and everybody else seems to be doing. So that's brilliant, Amy. Thank you very much. I did forewarn you about this. I normally ask my interviewees something that is not typically known about them. So if anyone's listening and who knows Amy, is there anything that you'd like to share with us, or any secrets that that you've got that you're happy to share on the show with us?
You did forewarn me, and I struggle. I think we all struggle when somebody says, oh, tell us something interesting about you. And unfortunately, I don't have any sort of major claim to fame or interesting sports achievement or anything like that. One thing that people don't often know about me, because it's completely unrelated to the role that I do, but I did train as a hairdresser, and I'm fully qualified. And I'm also I'm quite an accomplished dressmaker as well. So I do make quite a lot of clothes myself, and it's just a way to unwind and be creative at the end of a busy week.
Fantastic. Well, I bet you've been popular with being able to be a hairdresser, because my wife cut my hair a few weeks ago with our clippers, because we can't go to the hairdressers at the moment. And yes, it was quite an entertaining experience, not necessarily for me, but for everybody who was watching. So fantastic. So Amy, how can we find out more about you and your work? I guess LinkedIn is a good calling point to for people who want to connect with you and communicate with you directly. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Use LinkedIn. And I'm, you know, I've had a number of occasions where I've just sort of supported one-on-one. If fellow comms people would like any support, just drawing on my experiences, you know, I'm not the absolute expert out there. We're all sort of still learning as we go, because it just seems that things and organisations and communications changes all the time. But I'm more than happy to help with any questions. And I could definitely talk a lot more about neurodiversity, because I think, you know, we've just touched the tip of the iceberg there on, you know, thinking about how we communicate a little bit more clearly using language and channels. But then there's a whole host of other things underneath that. So absolutely reach out to me on LinkedIn, and I'll be more than happy to have a conversation or share a message or two.
Fantastic. Oh, that's brilliant. That's a really nice offer, Amy, and absolutely in the spirit of this show, which is all about, you know, helping people broaden their horizons, get new ideas, and connecting everyone together in our community. So thank you very much for that. I really appreciate the time. And we'll look after yourself, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Nice to chat to you. Thanks, Craig.
Thanks, Amy.
Thank you.
So thank you for listening to Engaging Internal Comms. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. We'd love to hear your thoughts about the show and any questions, ideas, or feedback that you'd have. Anything you'd like us to cover on future episodes too, please. So you can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, or you can get in touch with us via the contact form at engagingic.com. You can also sign up to our mailing list there, and we'll send you relevant news about the show and anything that we think you might be interested in when it comes to internal communications and employee engagement. If you like the show and you haven't already done so, please subscribe to it directly via your podcast service. And you can also subscribe via the links on our podcast page, which again is engagingic.com. If you like the show, we'd be really grateful if you could leave us a review, and also if you could leave some verbal feedback there as well, not just stars. That's always nice to know that we've been appreciated, and particularly how we've helped you. If you know anyone else who might like the show or might benefit from it, please tell them, please share it with them, please share the link to our website, engagingic.com. And that would be great, because we want to grow our community. We want to get as many people involved in the show as possible. And the bigger, the better. Okay, thank you.